And we're holding on Kuf Samach Dalet Omud Beis, four lines from the bottom. We left off with two stories involving Rebbe and his son, Reb Shimon. One was involving a Shtaimer Kosher, which Rebbe did not approve of it, either because in general he held that you shouldn't write a Shtaimer Kosher because people are not so familiar with it, or because this particular one had the date written in such a way that it was very hard to find it, and Rebbe himself thought that the Shtar didn't have, even have a date until Reb Shimon pointed out to him that it might be buried deeply between the folds. In any case, we said that Rebbe disapproved of it and looked when gave a sharp look to Reb Shimon, and Reb Shimon says, I didn't write it, Yehuda Chaita wrote it, and Rebbe tells him, Kloch Lashon Hara Hazeh, don't talk Lashon Hara like that, because it would have been enough for you to say that you didn't write it. You didn't need to also add the point that who actually did write it. Then we said there was another story where one time Rebbe was reading from a book of Tillim, and he was very impressed by the clear handwriting, and also he says, and he comments on that, and Reb Shimon says that Yehuda Chaita wrote it, and again we said that Rebbe said don't speak Lashon Hara, and we said it's Lashon Hara in the sense because when you speak about Tevosish or Chaveroi, you talk about the good that somebody else does, or the good qualities that he has, it may lead to talking about his negative qualities. We talked about yesterday, does that mean when he's talking about it a great deal, and therefore people might... that Ashbam says because they talk a great deal about how praiseworthy he is, therefore somebody might mention a gnus, something not so good about him, or is it we're talking about specifically when he's saying it in front of people who don't like him, etc.
So, al pi halacha, it's not Lashon Hara to say something good about someone.
No, to say something good about somebody is, of course, fine, but what you have to do is you have to do it carefully. So first of all, we also learned yesterday that the Maharsha had learned that these two things are connected, because now we're saying that this handwriting is Yehuda Chaita's, that in turn reinforced the previous Lashon Hara, that he was also the one who had written that Shtaimer Kosher, which Rebbe disapproved of. But other than that, if we don't say that the two things are tied together, then the point is, yes, by all means, praise somebody, but you have to be careful what the situation is. Make sure that you don't have people around who don't like him or in general, as the Rashbam says, you're doing it very fulsomely. You're doing like you're praising him a great deal, where then somebody is likely to say, you know what, even not a particular enemy of his, but nevertheless, you still have that somebody may point out, you know, by the way, there's something not so good about him.
That's an opinion. What's the halacha on that specific point?
The halacha is that you have to be, the halacha is by all means praise a fellow yid, but be careful to do it, not to do it in such a way that it could come to gnusish or chaveray. It's not something that you can say a blanket statement, you know, do this, don't do that. It has to be, you have to gauge based on the situation, based on the audience and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Amram Omer Rav, Shtolosh Averis Einorim Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yoyim. There are three Averis that a person is not saved from them any day. In other words, a person is very likely to trip up with them. Hear her Avera. The first one is thinking thoughts of Avera. Avera can mean more general, can mean Averis in general, although the Yad Ramah says that specifically Avera in this context, as it does in many other places in the Gemara, means hirhurim of znus. It's very common that people trip up with that. The Iyun Tefillah, the second one is Iyun Tefillah. Now, what does that mean? The Rashbam says that yesh meforshin, some explain that it means that after he daven, he's thinking to himself, you know what, for sure Hashem is going to answer, I daven with kavana, and therefore for sure Hashem is going to do what I wanted, and therefore, so that's a common failing a person should always realize. After all, look, you know, if you really thought of how much you owe the Eibishter, then you wouldn't think, well, I daven nicely now, therefore I deserve that Hashem should answer me. Anything that Hashem is going to give you is going to be a chesed. That's how the Rashbam says. Tosfos points out that on the face of it, that's not really, now it's true, there are other places in Shas where it uses the word Iyun Tefillah in that sense. But the question is, the fact is that really such a common failing that Rav Amram can say that Ein Odom Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yoyim, that a person is most people are susceptible to them all the time. How many people actually do that? How many people actually think, you know what, I really daven b'kavana, I deserve now that Hashem should answer my tefillah? So therefore, Tosfos says that no. On the contrary, Iyun Tefillah over here means where he fails to concentrate in davening. Now, you have an Iyun Tefillah, which is a positive thing. We say every morning in Eilu Dvarim, we say that one of the things that Adam Eichel Peres say in Ba'olam Hazeh, that he has the dividends of it in this world, and the Keren Kayemes Ba'olam Haba, one of those things is Iyun Tefillah. So Iyun Tefillah can be a good thing, but that's what Iyun Tefillah over there means, to have kavana in davening. Here what we mean is Iyun Tefillah is a lack of kavana in davening. Meaning, in other words, because it's a very common failing. You're saying the same words every day, and therefore over time a person tends to not have so much kavana. And Tosfos brings in this connection where one of the Amiroyim, Tosfos quotes Rav Matanya, that goes to Bach, says that's what he's supposed to be, Rav Yochanan, but whatever. He says, sometimes when I'm davening, I'm not fully concentrating, but I'm grateful for the fact that my head, when I get to Modim, my head automatically bows. So like almost like as if he has the muscle memory at that point, almost like the instinct at that point to bow when he reaches Modim, even if he's not focusing on that. Interestingly, by the way, in Hasidus, a lot of times that expression, Kora Migarme, it bows on its own, is used in a more positive sense, that a person has such a natural, deep-seated emunah and yira of Hashem, that therefore his head bows automatically when he's acknowledging Hashem in Modim. Whatever the case, Tosfos says that's what we mean over here by Iyun Tefillah, is the fact that a person does not have kavanah in davening. It's a very common failing. So that's the second. So again, you have Hiru Aveira, Iyun Tefillah, which is, again, according to the Rashbam, that a person thinks, I really daven well, I deserve that Hashem should answer and do what I want. Or according to Tosfos, that he fails to have kavanah in davening. And the third one, Veloshen Hara. The third one, says Rav Amram, is Loshen Hara. And what is the Loshen Hara? What do you mean? Ein Adam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom. A person is not saved from them every day. Every day a person speaks Loshen Hara. It's not that hard. I mean, it may be hard to avoid Loshen Hara, but it can't be so hard that you would say a person is not saved from it every day. Elo the Gemara says, right, what you mean is Avak Loshen Hara. We mean the dust of Loshen Hara, which means not real Loshen Hara in and of itself, but rather, so the Rashbam gives an example from a Gemara in Erchin. There's a whole sugya in Erchin that talks about Loshen Hara. We'll get to it in 2 years' time or so, Bez Hashem. So one thing it mentions is an example of a form of Loshen Hara would be someone asks you, where can I find a fire? Where can I find a flame where I can get a fire from? And you tell them, well, of course you'd be able to find it by Pliny. And he's saying it like in like a tone of voice or like or with added words or whatever, implying, you know why he always has a fire burning? Because he's kind of a glutton. He's constantly eating. He's constantly cooking and eating. And then you're not directly saying Loshen Hara about him, but you're sort of indirectly implying that he's a spendthrift and a glutton, and therefore he always has a fire burning. So that would be an example, Rashbam says, of what we mean avak loshen hara. It's very difficult for a person to avoid doing that. There are other mepharshim who point out that the smag points out that in fact the Gemara calls that outright loshen hara. Actually a different example of avak loshen hara is what we were just talking about, praising somebody in such a way where it's going to lead to a gnus of his, what we were just talking about in the Gemara before. So that would be an example of avak loshen hara. Again, like we're saying, that kind of, to be able to draw the line over there, on the one hand, to be able to say something nice about somebody else, but to not do it in a way which is going to lead to a gnus of his, is something very difficult to do, and therefore Rav Amram is saying that almost inevitably a person trips up on that every day. Now, the question still is, what do you mean? If a person can't be saved from these averas, the Marsha asks, then how can you call them averas? By definition, an avera is something that you could avoid doing, and then you go and do it. If you're saying, Ein Adam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom, then how do you even call it an avera in the first place? So he says the word, and also why the expression, Ein Adam Nitzel Mehen B'chol Yom. So he says like this, the word Adam really refers to a person as he is. You have a person is sort of half between Shemayim and Oretz. A person is a physical creature like all the other animals and whatnot out there, but he also has a neshama, which is a chelek of a tami mal mamash. In fact, that's the reason when we have the famous expression that the goyim are not called Adam, only atom kriyim Adam, is because the goyim don't have that chelek of a tami mal. Well then, what we're saying is when a person is on the level of Adam, where he's not entirely, a person should make himself more like a malach. As long as he's still on the level of Adam, it's the highest. It's true that Adam is the highest name for a person. You have Adam Ish Gever and Enosh, and Adam is the greatest of them. Nevertheless, he's still a boss of Adam, and therefore he's going to find it hard to avoid these three things, and almost inevitably he's going to trip up on them every day. So on the other hand, though, if he brings himself to a higher level, then he's beyond Adam, then he's already bringing himself to the level of a Malach, then of course he'll be able to avoid these three things. In fact, Maharsha says the very word Adam itself, the Gemara mentions in Sota, stands for Efer Dam Mora. A person is ashes, like Avraham says on himself, he has blood, and he has Mora, which is the bile, the digestive juices over there, which are bitter. So therefore, so he says, each one of these things, because a person is Afer, where he's dust and ashes, therefore that makes it harder for him to concentrate on davening, which is a ruchniistic thing. Because he has blood, and therefore that means he's easily, he has passions, therefore that brings him to Hira Ravera. And because he has Mora, because he has these bitter digestive juices, then therefore that leads to Midas Roy, such as Lashon Hara, or at least Avak Lashon Hara. But a person can overcome those three, and therefore in that sense, then we're not saying that a person is not susceptible to them. So that's what it means. In other words, the Gemara is saying that, in effect, what Rabbi Amram is saying is as long as you're going to remain on the level of Adam, you're going to be susceptible to these. Work on going beyond the level of Adam, and then you won't be. The Ir Yaakov explains it somewhat differently. He says the vort is that, of course, even at the level of Adam, a person could avoid them, but he's going to have to put in tremendous effort. So what Rav Amram is not saying when he says Einam Nitzel Mehem, he means unless a person puts in a tremendous amount of effort, then he's going to end up doing these things. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Yehuda Amar Rav Roy Vegezel. Among the averis that people do, most people are guilty of some form of gezel. Doesn't mean obviously gezel. We don't mean outright stealing, but we mean in other words, you know, that you have the people rationalize for themselves when it comes to business, for example, that they keep for themselves a little extra profit or something like that. So it's a form of gezel. Umiyut ba'arayas, then you have a minority of people who are guilty of arayas of various kinds. V'hakol b'loshen hara, and everybody is guilty of loshen hara. So again, the Gemara asks, "Hakol sakadayt? What do you mean b'loshen hara? Sakadayt? What do you mean loshen hara? Most people are not guilty of loshen hara. Ella avak loshen hara. Again, it means avak loshen hara, like we were just saying before. Again, we don't mean, in other words, again, when we say hakol b'loshen hara, we mean, in other words, a person has to put an effort in order to avoid that, and if he doesn't, then he's going to end up doing it. The Chofetz Chaim wrote his whole sefer on that topic because he realized people are not familiar with the details of what you are and b'chlal. People weren't realizing the gravity of lashon hara in the first place. But also, even if a person does know of that basic concept, he doesn't know the actual dinim. So that was why he sat down and wrote a sefer explaining all the dinim of it to make it more clear what you're allowed and what you're not allowed to say. They say, by the way, in that connection about the Chofetz Chaim himself, people who knew him said that he was actually, you would think, and people would say, you know, a person like that who wrote the book on Lashon Hara, you would think you have a conversation with him every moment he's going to be shushking you and telling you you're doing Lashon Hara or something, or he himself would be like a misanthropic kind of person and not really wanting to get into a conversation because you never know what he might get into. People said that actually, no, he was a great conversationalist, but he knew exactly what to say and what not to say. So, and that's the point. In other words, the Gemara is saying over here, a person has a responsibility to learn these things and train himself and do accordingly. Okay. The Gemara goes on. The Mishnah had said, Rav Shimon Gamliel Lema Kol Kaminah Gamadina. That Rav Shimon. Now, so we said in the Mishnah, again, we have the Shtar Mekusher, we have the Shtar Potzert. And we said, Rav Shimon Gamliel had said, Hakol Kaminah Gamadina, whenever you're making a Shtar, it should always be according to the local Minhag. So the question is, what does Rav Shimon Gamliel mean with that? The Tanakama Lesley Minig HaMedina, does the Tanakama not hold of that concept? Rav Shimon Gamliel is mentioning our Kok Minig HaMedina. Now you have the, so are we saying we have the various details within a Shtar Poshet and a Shtar Mekusher that the Mishnah had mentioned? Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying if you don't have that, if a particular place they have a different Minig, then you follow their Minig, wouldn't the Tanakama agree with that? The answer is no. Omer Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi explains like this. Here it says Rav Ashi actually the Rashbam instead has Girsa Abaya and Maharsha also corrects it accordingly. Anyway, so Abaya or Rav Ashi says no. What it means is like this. Ba'astra d'nehigi poshur in a place where the local minhag is always that the shtar is a shtar poshur for omalei ovidli poshur and the husband, for example, in the case of a get, tells the sofer write me a shtar poshut, but also ovid le makusher, and instead the sofer goes and writes him a shtar makusher, then for sure kpeda. Then we say it means the husband specifically does not want that. He specifically, this is the place where they do always do a shtar poshut, and the husband specifically asks for a shtar poshut, so then there's no question that the shtar would be possible. And in the case of a get, it would be a possible get. Similarly, nehigi mekusher. Similarly, if it's a place where the minhag is that all shtaris are shtar mekusher, v'omalei ovidli mekusher, and the husband says to the sofer, or again, you know, whoever it is that's commissioning the shtar, says to the sofer, write me a mekusher, v'ozo ovidli poshut, and instead he goes and writes him a shtar poshut, also kpeda. That means that there's a kpeda, it means he davka wanted it that way, and therefore since the sofer did differently then therefore there's no question the shtar is possible. So we don't need Rav Shimon Gamliel to be saying that. Ki pligi, the machloikus between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel is, ba'astra denehigi b'poshut u'makosher. You have a place where some people do a shtar poshut, others do a shtar makosher. Ba'omalei ovidli poshut. Now the husband, for example, or whoever's commissioning the shtar, says to the sofer, write me a shtar poshut. Va'ozo ovidli makosher, and instead the sofer goes and writes him a makosher. Now, does that mean when the husband said write a shtar poshut, does it mean davka it has to be a shtar poshut, or does it mean that he was just saying you could write a shtar poshut, but if you want, you could write a makusha instead? So that's the machlokas. Mar sova kpeda. The Tanakama holds that he deliberately meant it, he has a kpeda. He would be upset if it was done differently. If he did differently than his instructions, in this place, some people do shtar makusher. Doesn't matter. The husband asks for a shtar poshut, and therefore you, the sofer, have no business changing it. And therefore, the Tanakama would hold that it's possible. Mar sava, whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel holds mara mokum hulai. The husband doesn't necessarily mean you have to write a shtar poshut. He's saying, given that locally over here, some people do poshut, some people do makusher. If you want to make things easier for yourself, go ahead and write a shtar poshut. But I don't mind. But in other words, implicitly, he wouldn't be saying you have to write a shtar poshut. He's just meaning it's mara mokum hulai. He's just showing him a place. In other words, he's saying you want to write a shtar poshut, go right ahead. But I don't mind if you write a shtar makusher because locally people do both kinds. So that would be the machlokas. Then, when Rav Shimon Gamliel says hakol k'minhag hamedina, he means because the minhag hamedina includes over here to write a shtar makosher, then therefore Rav Shimon Gamliel considers that acceptable. Now Tosfos points out what would happen the other way around if he, not the other way around, but like this. In the case we're saying in the Gemara over here is where he told him make me a shtar posher, and instead he made him a shtar makosher. What about if he didn't say anything at all? What if he just said make me a shtar? Then even the Tanakama would agree that it's fine. And actually, Tosfos says even if it's a place where everybody does poshut, because he didn't say anything at all in all these three cases in the Gemara, he specifically told him the type of shtar, makusher or poshut, as the case may be. But Tosfos is saying if he just told him write me a shtar, then it would actually be kosher either way, even if the local minhag is not like that. Then Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Kiddushin on the subject that says. Yeah, that which says explicitly that even if he just says make me a shtar, that and he makes him the other kind, he makes him a shtar makusher, then it would be fine. Rishonim discussed, by the way, what about the other way around? What about if he told him in such a case to write him a kusher, and instead he wrote him a poshut? So the Rashbam who's saying that he would prefer a shtar makusher. And Bepashtus, because like we learned at the beginning of the parak, the whole reason for a shtar makusher is for the sake of a kohen, so he's not so quick to divorce his wife. So that would imply, in fact, the Ritva says that the Rashbam is implying then that if he told him to make it a posher and he made it a makusher, it would be fine, but not the other way around. If he told him to make it makusher and instead he made it posher, the Ritva learns that the Rashbam would be saying then that it would be possible because the whole point is he wanted the more complicated type and instead he went and made him the simple type, and even Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree that that's possible. So the Ritva says that. The Yad Ramah disagrees, actually, and says that either way, whether he said kosher and he did makosher, or the other way around, as long as the local minhag is either way, then according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it would be fine, and we would say Mara Makom Hulai. So the Gemara points out in this connection Amar Abaya, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Reb Shimon, Reb Elazar, Kulu Svir Lehu Marum Makom Hulai. We have three Tanoim where we can see that they all hold of this concept of Marum Makom Hulai, that even when a person gives an instruction, it doesn't mean that it has to be Davka that way. It's okay if it's done differently, as long as that's a reasonable way to do it. Like in our example over here, where Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying, because it's reasonable to do either Pashut or Makushut, because in this area people do both, then therefore we'll accept either kind, even though the husband said to do one kind and he did the other kind. So we have three Tanoim who hold of that concept of Mara Makom Hulai. We have a lot of places in Shas where Abaya does that. He points out different Tanoim that all hold the same way. We have a concept that goes back to the Gaonim that says, Ein Halacha Keshita, that when we do that, this kind of thing is called a Shita. We have a group of Tanoim who all hold the same way, and by saying that, that amounts to saying the Halacha is not like them. Either because it means those three Tanoim as Yechidim hold this way, and everybody implying that everybody else holds differently, or because even among those Tanoim themselves, not necessarily do they agree with each other's cases. There might be in each case one of them is saying a particular application of it, but he wouldn't necessarily hold that the same din applies in a different case. So the cases are as follows. Reb Shimon Gamliel Hoda Amoran. We said Reb Shimon Gamliel's case over here about a Shtar Poshut versus a Shtar Mekusher, where he's saying that as long as in Minhag HaMedina is to write either one, then it's fine if the sofer writes either one. Then there's a Reb Shimon, the Tanan. Where do we see Reb Shimon saying such a thing? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Kiddushin. Reb Shimon, now you have a case, for example, that a man says to a woman, I'm going to be Makadish you with a silver dinner. And instead he gives her a gold one. Now, if it was the other way around, if he had said, I'm going to give you a gold dinner, and instead he gives her a silver one, there's no question the kedushin are no good. Even a silver dinner is worth a lot more than a pruta. Doesn't matter. He misled her to think that she's going to get a gold dinner, and he gave her less, and therefore she's not willing to be makadish herself to him, and to ask her herself to everybody else, to be makna herself to him, as is the terminology, with less than what he had agreed, with less than what she had agreed to. But what about if he gives her more? What if he told her a silver dinner, and instead he gives her a gold dinner? The Tanakama holds over there that it would still be possible, because it still wouldn't be kedushin, because she could say she has a particular reason why she wants a gold dinner. Tosfos points out over there, let's say, for example, a silver dinner. I mean, let's say, for example, she's making a piece of jewelry and she needs one more silver dinner to complete it. Meanwhile, Reb Shimon holds that if he misled her and then he gave her more, so he's in a positive way, meaning that he told her he's going to give her less, and then he gave her more mekudeshes, then she would be mekudesh. So in other words, it's a similar idea. In other words, where the Tanakama is going to say that she said a silver dinner, and she means davka silver, no other metal will do. And Reb Shimon Gamliel holds it's only mara mokam ulai. She's saying, I'm willing to accept a silver dinner, but if you want to give me more than that, that's also fine. Reb Elazar, where we see Reb Elazar holds of such a concept. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Gittin. If a woman says to her Shliach Kabbalah, receive the get from me in such and such a place, and the Shliach goes and receives it from the husband in a different place, possible. So the Tanakhama says the get is possible. But Reb Elazar Machshir, whereas Reb Elazar says the get is kosher. So the Tanakhama would say, that the Tanakhama would say that the reason why she said this particular place, she doesn't want to be humiliated in a different place. This might be a place where she knows there's nobody around there who knows her or whatever, therefore when the get is received in her name, she's not going to be embarrassed, but someplace else she might be, and therefore it's no good. Reb Elazar holds Mara Mokum Hulai. She's telling him you don't have to go all the way you can go to this particular place, so it's not so much out of your way, and receive the get. You want to go further and receive it someplace else, Gizil Dehet. So Reb Elazar Machshir, Ma'ar Sava, Kapeda. Again, because the Tanakhama holds that she's saying specifically, I want the get to be received in this place and not in a different place. Or Ma'ar Sava, Ma'ar Mokum Ulai, whereas Reb Elazar holds that she's only telling him, you could go there, but you're not required to. If you want to go someplace else and receive it, that would also be fine. And another way of looking at it, also Rashi explains in Gittin, that it means, in other words, basically she's telling him, here is where my husband is. This is where you'll find him to receive the get. But if you happen to meet him someplace else, because don't you hate, that's also good, according to Reb Elazar. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said, we have a case, we said in the Mishnah that one of the differences between a shtar poshut and a get poshut and a get mekusher is a get poshut, a regular shtar, needs at least two edim. A get mekusher needs at least three, he said. Specifically with a shtar mekusher, we said it needs as many, we discussed over there that Ashbam had brought from a relevant Gemara in Gittin, that it needs to have at least as many edim as the number of ksharim, depending on how we understand ksharim. If we understand the format of a get mekusher, like the way that Ashbam and Rashi and then the Rambam and so forth understand that it means it's folded and pleated, then it means that you have to have one ed per pleat. If you learn like the Yad Ramah, then it means that it's rolled and that it's rolled and it's rolled closed and then it's tied using strips of parchment that stick out from the ends of it, then it means you need a number of edim equal to those, to that number of strips. Whatever the case, the point is, the Mishnah had said, now again, we're saying a shtar poshur needs at least two, a shtar mekusher needs at least three. So the Mishnah had said, poshur shekosu by eid echad chola, that if a shtar poshur has only one aid in it, or if a shtar mekusher has two edim in it, then it's possible. So the question is, the Gemara asks, "B'shlema mekusher shekosu b'shnei edim posel." The fact that the Mishnah has to tell us that if it's a shtar mekusher and it has two edim, that it would still be posel. Fine, if we understand why the Mishnah needs to tell us that. Sakrad al-Hamina. Otherwise, you would think, "Hoyle ba'alma kosher." Look, usually a shtar is fine with two edim. Hochanami kosher. So you would think that a shtar mekusher, okay, it's supposed to have three, but maybe b'diavad it's fine with two. Kamash malan, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us to posel that it's posel because the takana of the Chachamim is that it has to have at least three, and therefore if you do any less, then you're not following the takana of the Chachamim, and therefore it's posel. Ella, but the question is, poshut shekosu be'ed echad, the fact that if a shtar poshut has only one aid, that's possible, pshita. Isn't that obvious? A shtar with one aid is no good. You always need two aidim. So what's the chiddush of the Mishnah mentioning that part? The answer is, Amar Abaya, lo nitzruch ella da'afilu aid echad b'ksav ve'ed echad b'peh. So Abaya says the chiddush of the Mishnah would be, what if you have another aid b'al peh with him? In other words, yes, you have only one aid signed on the shtar, but then you have, when the shtar is brought to Beis Din, another aid comes and says that, yes, this loan took place. So he's not signed on the shtar. Nevertheless, that shtar is not going to be considered a shtar as far as collecting from the chosim shabodim, from the kochus. Because the whole point why you have the whole point how a shibud works, the fact that you can collect from the chosim shabodim, is all based on the concept that there's a koil. When you have a shtar halva, then there's a koil. It becomes public knowledge that there exists this outstanding loan, and therefore people will know when they're buying property from him, they're taking their chance. So therefore, that's when you can collect from the chosim mishabodim. But in order to do that, you need two edim signed on the shtar. Here, you only have one sign in the shtar. So even though you have two edim, nevertheless, it's only going to consider the milval peh. So all you can do is collect from the chosim b'nei chorin. For that matter also, the Rashbam also says, another point is, because he wouldn't consider it a valid shtar, it means the loiva would have the ability to claim paraiti. Normally, when a malva brings out a shtar and the loiva wants to say, paraiti, I already paid it back, then you have, Beis Din is going to ask, or the malva will ask, shtar chabiyadi, my boy, if you already paid it off, how come I still have the shtar? If you paid it off, you should have demanded back the shtar for you to take it and rip it up, as we touched on in the Gemara yesterday, or to write a shover, as the case may be. We're going to talk about this later in the parak, but whatever. Now when we have a shtar that has only one aid sign on it, even though there were in fact two aidim for the loan, nevertheless, the loiver will be able to claim paraiti. Because again, the shtar was not done properly, and therefore the loiver might even think to himself, you know what, it's not a real shtar, and therefore I don't even have to bother asking the malva back for it. So that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Even you have one aid on the shtar, but you do have another aid who actually saw the halvah and is ready to come and testify in Beis Din, nevertheless, that's not still not considered a shtar. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Now, Tosfos discusses over here in some detail, and other Rishonim also bring up the point that you, in general, you have a concept in halacha called mipihem veloy mipi ksavam. You have in general, minat Torah, edus is acceptable only when it's verbal, not when it's written in a shtar. So So here, in any case, then so you only have one aid coming. You only have one aid coming to Beis Din. So what good anyway would it do that you have one aid written in the Shtar when you have two aidim in the Shtar Mela? Then we say that that's two aidim together. But when you only have one in the Shtar and you have one coming in person to Beis Din, then really you only have one aid. We would have to ignore the other one because then it's Mipiyam Volemi Piksavam. Then we say that it's not really you can't really the fact that he wrote in the Shtar is not really considered an aidus. So Tosfos says actually what it means is that no, the second aid, here we were saying that the second aid comes to testify about the loan, not really, Tosfos says. What we're talking about over here is that the second aid comes and says that I saw that, so you have like this, the one who's in writing is saying that I saw the loan. The one who's coming by pair is not saying I saw the loan. He's saying I saw him giving the shtar. I saw the loiver giving the shtar to the malver with the signature on it. So now, so that kind of thing, it wouldn't be the kind of thing where you could have both of them in writing. By definition, the second one is only going to be verbal. So if it was two adim in writing, then that would be good enough by itself. But because here we only have one in writing, then therefore the other one doesn't combine, then therefore the other one, so the other one combines with him in the sense that now we have two Adim, so we have two Adim, but on the other hand we don't have a Shtar, and therefore as the Rashbam says, he can't collect from the Chosim Mishabodim and so forth. Then you also have there's other points as well. The Rashba makes the point that when we say Mipiyam V'loy Mipiksavam, that an aid cannot testify in writing, that might be only we're talking about when when he's unable to speak. So then we don't allow him to write his edus down and give it to Beis Din. But if he's capable of speaking, then we can instead accept his edus in writing. So that's another way of explaining how it is that over here you have two edim, one in writing, one verbal, and we will consider them two edim. We just won't consider it a shtar. Because the second one, the one who wrote in the shtar, could have also come and spoken in Beis Din. Instead, he chose to write it in a shtar. That's fine. That can be considered a valid edus. Nevertheless, since we don't have two edim in the shtar, then the point is we don't have a shtar over here. So there's further discussion among Rishonim about various angles about various angles within all of this when we say that Adim can combine together like that and when not. The Gemara actually continues. Amemer achshav eidecha b'ksav ve'eidecha alpeh. Amemer said that no, actually a shtar would be kosher in a case like that. It would be a valid shtar when one aid is written on the shtar and the other one is verbal. So not like Abaya says, we're fine, we have two aidim over here, but we don't have a valid shtar. Amemer is saying we even have a valid shtar. So Rav Ashi asked Amemer, well, what do you have to say about what Abaya said? Says, I have not heard of that. Which means that I don't hold of it. In other words, I don't agree with Abaya in that. I hold it would in fact be kosher, even if you have one Baal Peh and one in the Shtar. And it would be considered a perfectly kosher Shtar insofar as collecting from Nechosim Shabodim and all that. Well, the question is Elakashim Asnissim. So then the question goes back, then in that case, what's the Chiddush of our Mishnah? Again, according to Abaya, there's a big Chiddush that even though we have two Edim over here and it is considered an Edus, nevertheless, we don't have a valid Shtar. But if according to our Meimar, it's fine with one Ed in writing and one in, and one Baal Peh, then what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah that if you only have one Ed that it's possible? What else would he have to be talking about where there's only one aid written in the Shtar and no aid coming verbally to Beis Din? Well, of course it's going to be possible. And the answer is, Hokamash Malon. According to our Meimar, the Chiddush of the Mishnah would be as follows. You're right. It's not so much that we need a Chiddush to tell us that one aid in a regular Shtar is possible. That's obvious. The Chiddush is that the Mishnah, we're comparing two aidim in a Shtar Makusher to one aid in a Pasher, meaning it's the same kind of Psul. Ma Hosam Psula Daraisa. When it comes to a shtar pasher, the psul, the fact that you have only one aid in it, the fact that it's pasul, is daraisa, because you only have one aid, and you need two aidim for anything. It'll be effective, at least maybe as far as shvua, that he can cause the guy to swear on his claim, but not to actually collect the money. Af Hochanami, the point is, of a mission then is the same way, by a Shtama Kosher, with two Edim, Psula Da'araisa, the fact that it's possible is actually, it's possible on a Da'araisa level. And therefore, in other words, if it was a get, it wouldn't work at all. And so forth. So in other words, yes, the Mishnah is not, there's not really a chiddush in the Mishnah as far as a shtar poshut with one aid, that is a dava poshut. And in fact, we would not hold like Abaya, who says that in that case, even if you have one verbal aid, it would still be possible. No, we would actually say such a shtar, if you had one verbal and one written aid, it would be kosher. The point of the Mishnah is just to inform us that the two aidim and a shtar kosher is actually possible on a deraisa level. Now, what do we mean by a deraisa level? Tosfos points out the whole concept of a shtar mekusher is the whole concept of a shtar mekusher is derabanan. So, how can we really call it over here a psul deraisa? So, Tosfos says you're right. What we mean is that first of all, it can mean that it could mean, in other words, that the same way as if you had a get with one aid, it would be possible in the sense that now if the woman remarries and she has a child, the child is going to be a mamzer. The same way over here, the child will be a mamzer derabanan. So you're right, we're using the word deraisa inexactly, but we mean, in other words, it would have the same consequences as if it was deraisa. Then Tosfos is also bringing, and then Rashbam explains that it means deraisa again in the sense that you can't collect from that you can't collect even from nechosim b'nei chorin. But Tosfos says that no, even if it was posel derabanan, you wouldn't be able to collect from Bnei Chorin. So calling it posel daraisa doesn't make a difference in that regard. So no, it would mean, in other words, that it has no, that for example, if it's a get, then it would be posel daraisa. There is an interesting idea, actually, that the Ritva says a different answer to answer this question. What do you mean calling it daraisa when the whole concept of such a shtar is derabanan? So the Ritva gives an explanation. No, think about it. Mida Araisa, what are we saying over here? Shtar Mekusher, we said at the beginning of the parak, the Edim sign on the back. Mida Araisa, there's no such shtar as a sign on the back. The whole of Mida Araisa, you have to have the signatures on the front of the shtar. Midrabbanon, they're allowing, they created this concept of a shtar Mekusher, and they put the Edim on the back in order that it should be as different as possible from a shtar Pasher. Well, that's as long as you follow the way that the format that the Chachamim is set up, and you have at least three Edim. If you're going to have only two Edim, then you're back to, it's not following the Takana of the Chachamim, because you don't have three Edim. It's not following the format Daraisa, because Daraisa, there's no such thing as signing a shtar on the back. And therefore, it really would be posel Daraisa, in the sense you don't have a shtar, you don't have a thing that can be considered a shtar here at all. So therefore, so that justifies the Gemara calling it Daraisa. Whereas again, according to Tosfos, we're saying that it's really not Daraisa, it's really only Darabanan, but we mean it has the same consequences as if it was Daraisa in terms of Mamzerus and so forth. Okay. And the Gemara continues. Now you have like this. There is a machloikus in Masechta Sanhedrin, so we're going to get to it in a few weeks, Be'ez Hashem, where you have like this. If two Edim come to Beis Din at different times, so what happens, for example, that, say, for example, you have one aid comes to Beis Din on Sunday and says that Reuven owes Shimon $100. And then another aid comes another day to Beis Din, or even they come at the same time, whatever. The point is that that one aid can be saying that Reuven borrowed $100 from Shimon on Sunday, and one aid would say that he borrowed from him on Monday. In the Mishnah over there, in the Gemara, in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha holds that would be fine, because the fact is, between the two of them, they're saying that Reuven owes Shimon $100. It's different halvois. Rabbi Shimon Korcha doesn't care about that. The Tanakhama says it has to be they both are saying that they saw the same loan on Sunday. Then you have another machlokas over there, which is Rav Nosson and the Chachamim. What about when they come to Beis Din? Do they have to come to Beis Din at the same time, or can they come at different times? Can they have where one aid comes on Sunday and testifies that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and another aid comes on Monday and says the same thing? Rav Nosson holds that's no good. They have to come together, and the Chachamim hold that it would be fine. So now the next piece of Gemara is going to relate back to what we were talking about before, about one aid in writing and one aid in person, but it's also going to relate to that machlokas, to those two machlokas in Masechta Sanhedrin. So Amemar continues. So again, we left off, we said that Amemar was saying, I don't hold of what Abaya says, that if you have one aid sign in the shtar, and then you have another one coming and saying verbally and based in, I can testify that this loan took place, according to Tosfos, that this shtar was given over with the signature on it, Amemar says, here, Abaya is saying that's not a valid shtar, Amemar is saying that would be a perfectly fine shtar. So Amemar says, Teda, you can see that, you can demonstrate that as follows. The Shochu Mitam Chavraya L'Rav Yirmiya. The Chachamim, the Chavraya, the Chaverim in the Beis Medrash, the Rambam has the expression that the Chachamim are called Chaverim because they have a true Chaverus, they have a true friendship between them, because not based on many people, the common idea of friendship is often based on you do something for me, I do something for you, that kind of thing. It's obviously Tluy B'Dover, whereas the love and the friendship of some of the Chachamim is a true one, and therefore they're called Chavraya. Anyway, so the Chavraya, the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash, the Shocho Mitam, they sent from there, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, to Rabbi Yirmiya, they sent a message to Rabbi Yirmiya. Now, Rabbi Yirmiya himself was not in the Beis Medrash, because earlier in the Masechta, on Daf Chof Gimel, it tells a story over there where one time they were discussing a certain point in the Beis Medrash, and Rabbi Yirmiya asked a question that caused them that they decided to expel him from the Beis Medrash. The story is over there. You have where there was a whole thing over there about if you find a bird within 50 amos of a birdhouse, then you assume it belongs to the owner of that birdhouse, as opposed to if you find it further away, then it means somebody dropped it there and you have no idea where it came from, and therefore you'd be able to keep it. So now, and the Gemara had established over there the point that the reason is because a bird that's not able to, we're talking about a young bird that's not able to fly yet, it's going to walk, it's never going to walk more than 50 amos from its nest. So therefore, if you find it outside of 50 amos, it means somebody brought it there. So then, in the Gemara over there, Rabbi Yirmiya had asked, what happens if you find the bird with 1 foot within 50 amos and the other one outside 50 amos? So the Gemara says, for that, they threw him out of the Beis Medrash. Why did they throw him out? Rashi over there says, that's still part of the Masechta that has Rashi. He says, because he was Matsriach on them. He's bothering them with questions like that, which they didn't appreciate. Tosfos says that's not the reason, because we find many other cases in the Gemara where they ask much weirder questions than that, and nobody was thrown out for that. No, the reason is, Tosfos says, which Rabbeinu Tam says, because it means basically he's questioning what the Chachamim said. The Chachamim have said as an established fact that a bird does not walk more than 50 amos by saying that it can have 1 foot out. It means that he doesn't truly believe in Divrei Chachamim, and that's a problem for somebody in the Beis Medrash, and therefore they told him to leave. So now he's outside the Beis Medrash, but they still recognize, of course, he's a great Talmid Chacham, so they were still asking him questions. So they sent him the following question from inside the Beis Medrash. And again, once we go through the whole discussion, then we're going to see, Amemar is going to point out how this discussion supports what I'm saying about the shtar with one aid in it, and then one aid testifying verbally. The expression over here in the Gemara, Shocho Mitam, by the way, Mitam means from there, from Eretz Yisrael, but it's a bit of an odd expression because if they're all there in Eretz Yisrael, there's no reason to use the word Mitam. You usually use that when they're sending a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So in fact, a number of the Rishonim don't have that girsa, and the Rashash duly says that it shouldn't be here. On the other hand, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out maybe what happened is, maybe after Rabbi Yirmiya was expelled from the Beis Medrash, maybe he moved to Bavel, and then therefore they're having to send this message to him all the way in Bavel. We find, in fact, Rabbi Yirmiya himself was originally from Bavel, and then he moved to Eretz Yisrael, so now we may have figured, you know what, if I'm persona non grata here in Eretz Yisrael, then I may as well move back to my hometown. Anyway, so they sent him the following question. Again, if you have one aid in writing on the shtar, sign on the shtar, and one aid verbally, maushi starfu, can we combine them together and we have a valid aidus and we would consider and we would say that the shtar is a good shtar? Now they continued in the question. Now if you're going to ask, if you're going to say, now if the question is according to the Tanakhama who disagrees with Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha about the Machloikas, again, where you have one aide saying, I saw him lend money on Sunday, and the other one says, I saw him lend on Monday, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says that's no good, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says that's fine, and we can take money, we can say he owes the $100, and the Tanakhama disagrees and say they have to be both made on the same thing. So if you're going to say according to the Tanakhama, there's no question to ask. Dr. the Shnaim B'Ksav, Shnaim Balpeh, Lemit Stafi. After all, the Tanakhama there would say Never mind one aid and one aid. According to them, even if you had two aidim in writing and two aidim baal peh, we would still say they don't combine together because they're testifying about different things. So therefore said so of course they would say that they're not mitzvahs, and therefore that you have so you don't have one big edus over here, you have two separate edus in over there. So then there's no question that they would say that one aid in writing and one aid baal peh is not going to combine together. Especially this fits well with what Tosfos was saying on Amud Aleph. This is part of what Tosfos uses, this part of the Gemara, as a proof that we're not talking about the Eid Baal Peh testifying about the writing of the Shtar, but rather about the handing over of the Shtar, so then it really is very similar to that concept that the Tanakhama is saying. They both have to be giving Eidos on the same action, and here they're doing on two different things. One is saying that the loan took place, and the other one is saying that the Shtar was handed over. So then there's no question, according to them, that there's no reason to even ask the question. The question that we're asking is specifically according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, who says that they can be giving edus about something that happened on Sunday, and one can be giving about something that happened on Sunday and another one on Monday, and we combine them together, because either way, the point is he owes them $100. So then the question is, does Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha say, Shnayim b'ksav or Shnayim b'al peh hudim mitzarfi, only when you have two edim in writing and two verbal, then we would combine them together, and then we would say that we have a complete edus over here. But when you have one in writing and one verbal, maybe even Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha would hold that that doesn't combine together. Or maybe not. And so Amemar, telling over the story, later on says, Shalach Lahu, Reb Yumiya sent them back the following message. Ani eini kedai sheshalachtem li. I'm not really worthy to determine that you asked me the question. Ela, kach das talmidchem noita. However, the opinion of your Talmud, meaning myself, it inclines towards the idea, sheet staufu, that they would combine together. So what he's saying in a very humble way, in other words, I'm not great enough for you to ask as though I have the last word on the subject, but I would hold that they do combine together. So Amema says, well, therefore, so we see that Reb Yumiya holds that they do combine together, therefore, applying that, that's exactly the same case as over here. Therefore, Amema says, that's the proof that we can say that is the halacha, and not like a buyer who said that they don't combine together.
Okay. Was he referring to being thrown out?
He didn't specifically refer to that. He wasn't specifically referring to that. However, the Gemara is going to say at the end of the story that because of this, they readmitted him. Now that they saw that he's talking in a way that shows respect for the Chachamim, now they were able to readmit him to the Beis Medrash. But that's going to be at the end. It sounds just the opposite,
that he seems to be telling them, look, I'm not worthy because you threw me out, so I'm not worthy. I can't answer your question.
No, because the fact is they're asking him questions during that time as well. If he wasn't worthy, if he felt, in other words, you kicked me out, so therefore I have nothing to do with you, you wouldn't even bother answering. The fact that he answered in such a way, and he answers, you know, this is what my opinion is, however, don't take it as last word on the subject, that shows that now he has the bittul that a person should have when he's learning Torah, and therefore he can be readmitted into the Beis Medrash. But that's what we're going to have at the end. First, we're going to go through another version of what the question and the answer was.
It sounds self-defeating to throw someone out of this midrash and then to write to him in Babel to ask him questions that he was not allowed to answer when he was in the Beis Midrash.
No, he wasn't allowed to answer them. No. With the question that got him thrown out of the Beis Medrash, it wasn't an answer. That was a question that he asked, which again, according to Rashi, showed that he's harassing them with questions that don't deserve to be asked. And according to Tosfos, that he's asking them a question which demonstrates that he doesn't seem to have full amunas chachamim. Either way, they recognize that he's a great Talmud Chacham. They said, with that kind of attitude, where you're going to be bothering us with irrelevant questions, or we're going to be bothering us with questions that show that you don't fully accept the principles of Amunas Chachamim, then we can't have you in our company. But of course, they still recognize his great Talmud Chacham. You know, we have in an earlier generation, thinking of what happened with Rabbi Eliezer as well. They had to put Rabbi Eliezer in Nidui as well. But nevertheless, they all recognize
him. And they asked him questions also?
I don't think it says they asked him questions, so that's true. It's not exactly the same thing. But nevertheless, the point is they still recognize that he's an enormous Talmid Chacham and an enormous tzaddik. They just say he's doing something that's disrupting the things in the Beis Medrash. So he also, they're just
fine. That wasn't what he was thrown out for. He was thrown out because they didn't believe that he believed in Emunah Chachamim, as you said.
Well,
now, what makes them believe? What makes them believe that he now believes in Emunah Chachamim as opposed to
When I'm saying that he didn't have Emunah Chachamim, I mean, that, maybe that's a little harsh way to say it. The point is, a question like that indicates, like, maybe when he's, it maybe indicates that when he, I shouldn't say, I mean, you're right, how could I say about a tzaddik like Rav Yumi, he doesn't have Emunah Chachamim. What it is, in other words, there's an expression the Gemara has in a few places. It actually, you find Rav Yumi himself asking questions to his Rebbe, Rav Zeira, for example. At one point, Rav Yumi asks Rav Zeira about a certain particular thing where the Chachamim give a certain measurement. How could it be that just a tiny change of like that across a certain threshold is going to make a difference and it's going to be kosher or apostle with one tiny difference? And Rav Zeira explains to him, Kol midis Chachamim kein hu, this is how it is. When the Chachamim set up a measurement, it means that's the measurement and there's no playing around with it. You're not going to start saying, let's say, for example, 40 saw for a mikveh. The idea behind 40 saw for a mikveh is that that's enough water to cover a whole person's body. Don't start thinking, well, maybe it would be enough if it was 39.9 saw. It would also be good because it'll also cover a person's body. No, when the Chum say 40 saw means 40 saw and there's no playing around with it. So now when Rav Yumi is asking the question about the 50 amos, about the one leg out of the bird outside 50 amos, it shows, I shouldn't say that he's not having a Munus Chachamim. It shows, in other words, that he still hasn't fully accepted that principle that when the Chachamim say a figure, it means there's no playing around with it. So fine, that doesn't mean that he doesn't accept the rest of Torah Shemachsav and Torah Shalalpeh, Chas V'Shalom. So they still recognize, by all means, they can ask him questions, but for that particular kind of thing, then it means he can't be in their company in the Beis Medrash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't believe in that specific answer of the Chachamim, does that really deserve to be thrown out of the Beis Medrash?
Apparently the other Chachamim in the Beis Medrash figured that yes. I mean, I guess, you know, in a vague way, I guess you can think of it, you know, Lahavdil, if you have, let's say, for example, you know, imagine you have a medical conference, you know, and somebody gets up over there and starts questioning some basic concept that every, you know, imagine for example, you're having a conference, I don't know, a conference on infectious diseases, for example, and somebody gets up and starts saying, yeah, but are diseases really caused by bacteria or is there something else? You know, I mean, you're not going to want them around. You know, by all means, let's have that discussion, but that's a discussion for another time and place. Right now, we're dealing with how we sequence the bacteria or whatever it is, you know, then a question like that is out of place. Here, it's the same kind of thing. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, let's go on. So that was Amemo's version of the story, and he says you can see from Rabbi Yirmiyah's answer that this should be the halacha. But Rav Ashi answers back to Amemo, no, because that's not the only version of the story. Anan hochi masninan lo. We in our Beis Medrash, we learn that story, we learn the question and the answer differently. The Shochol Chavraya Rabbi Yirmiyah, in our version, says Rav Ashi, the way we learned it in our Beis Medrash, the Chachamim asked Rabbi Yirmiyah, Shnayim Sheidu, two people came to Beis Din and said the same Eidus, Echad beBeis Din Zeh, Echad beBeis Din Zeh, each one in a different Beis Din. Now, of course, each Beis Din, having only heard from one aid, they can't be mechayev the guy to pay on the basis of that. Mahu, what would be the din? Mahu shiavoyu Beis Din, Eitzel Beis Din. Can we have the two bote dinim join together? Let's say the aidim have gone out of town and we can't call them back together. So now, can we have the members of the two bote dinim get together? The Yitzchafu and then the Dayanim will combine together and we'll say, well, each group of us heard one aid and therefore we can combine together and we have two, and we have between all of us, we've heard the aidus from two aidim and therefore it would work. So would that work? So according to that version, that's the question that they asked Rabbi Yirmiyah. And they continued, Alibet the Tanakama did of Nosan Loti Barilach, if we're going according to the Tanakhama who disagrees with Rav Nosson, where again the Machlokas of Rav Nosson and the Chachamim is, Rav Nosson holds that even if the Edim come on different days, then that's fine. Rav Nosson holds rather that they have to come together, and the Tanakhama holds they can even come on different days, and each day when they come, they'll hear their Eders. So according to the Tanakhama Loti Borilach, there's no question. After all, the Tanakhama against Rav Nosson holds that even within one Beis Din, even if the Edom came at different times and neither of them was present when the other one was there, then still they say, Nami limits Starfi. Then also they say they also say that they don't combine together. I had it backwards before. The Tanakhama is the one that says they have to come at the same time, and Rav Nosson is the one that says that they can come on different days. So the Tanakhama against Rav Nosson for sure. If even in the same Beis Din they can't come on different days, and you're not going to combine them, then how much more so when they come to two different Bate Dinim? The question would be specifically according to Rav Nosson, would we say where Rav Nosson says we can combine them only when they come to the one Beis Din, but if they come to two different Bate Dinim, even Rav Nosson would agree that's no good. Maybe there's no difference. You could still have the members of the two Bate Dinim combined together and call it one big Eidus. So according to that version, that was the question. They asked Rabbi Yemiya, v'sholachuhu, and then Rabbi Yemiya sent them back a message, ani eini kedai shatim shalachtem li, I'm not really worthy that you asked me, as if like mine is the last word on the subject, ela kach das tamid chamnoita, but your Talmud, meaning myself, holds this way, that they would combine together, at least according to Rav Nosson's opinion. So that being the case, then Rav Ashi says, if that's the case, then that has nothing to do with the question of one aid b'ksav and one aid baal peh, and you can't prove anything from that story. And the Gemara continues. There's more versions of the story. There's going to be altogether in the Gemara four different versions of what the question was that they asked Rabbi Yemiya and what the answer was. Obviously, we could say maybe they asked all four questions and he answered all four of them, or whatever. Anyway, Marbar Avchia says the question that they asked Rabbi Yemiya was as follows. Shnayim she'idu b'vestin zeh. Suppose you have, not before the previous case was, the version of Rav Ashi is that you have two Edim in one Vestin and two in the other. One aid in one basin and one in the other. Mar Bachia's version is Shnaim She'idu Bevestin Zeh. Two Edim came and gave Edus in one basin. And then some of the Dayanim left. Some of the Dayanim left and they were replaced by other Dayanim. V'chozru Ve'idu Bevestin Zeh. And then those same Edim came and testified in a different Beis Din, and also some of the Dayanim then left. So now we have, they did this several times. So we have several different Bate Dinim that have heard their Eidos, but each time we don't have enough of the Dayanim left to be able to pass in the Din, because you need three Dayanim, and here you have, each time when they went to three different Bate Dinim, each one, now you only have one Dayan left in town. The question then was, can we get one Dayan from each of the three Bate Dinim to come together and constitute a new Beis Din and say, well, each one of us heard from the two Edim, and therefore that would work. And again, they continued, I'll live it Nosson like Tiborilach. Now, if the question is according to Rav Nosson, then there's no question. If he says that we can combine together even Edim, he says even one aid in one Beis Din, and one aid in another Beis Din. Rav Nosson says they could combine. Dayonimi boya, would you need to say, and the Edim, after all, are not always the Edim. They say they're Edus, but it's not always so precise when they say they're Edus. I mean, they're saying they're Edus, but they don't necessarily, they don't realize all the details and all the corollaries that come from it in halacha. The Dayonim know that. And yet we say Rav Nosson says they could combine. Dayonim Idboya, would there be a question that Dayonim could combine together and therefore, yes, you could have one Dayan from each Beis Din come together and constitute a new Beis Din and be able to judge the case accordingly. So, by the way, Rabbeinu Yonah points out over here, we do have to have that each one heard the complete Edus over here. Otherwise, if they didn't yet figure out, if they didn't have a chance to finish cross-examining the Edim, then anyway, you have a problem of Edim P. Aid, because then you're working on hearsay. So once they already said that they accept what the Dayanim, what the Edim have said in the respective Bate Dinim, and they just didn't have a chance to pass on the halacha yet, then this is what we're talking about over here. Anyway. So the question is not according to Rav Nosson, according to him, for sure it would be fine. Ella, Kiti Boilach, a little bit to Hanakama, the Rav Nosson. The question we have pointed at Hanakama against Rav Nosson, would we say Edim who delimits Safinan? Would the Chachamim say over there that you can't combine together Edim? Because again, the Edim are saying in different Botejinim, and maybe it's not so precise. Aval Dayonim with Safinan, but maybe the Dayonim we could combine together, and therefore one Dayan from each basin can come and form a new basin. Or Jom Aloshno, would the Chachamim disagree? And so according to this version, also Shalach Lahu, Rabbi Yirmiyah sends them back. Ani eini kedai shatam shlachtem li. I'm not worthy that you sent me this question and that I have the final word on it. Elakach das talmid chamnoita. But this is what your talmid. This is what I my das is inclining to the following idea. Yitzkarfu that they would combine together according that they would combine together. Even according to the Tanakama against Rabbi Nosson. So the Ritva actually explains that according to this version of the story, you have to ask what was the question in the first place. You have two Edim in each Basin, and the Dayonim themselves are coming together. All it is that each Basin heard the Edus in a different place. Why would we even think there's a problem in the first place? So we're talking about that. Let's say that they heard at different times, for example. So therefore, it was in different Bote Dinim. Maybe it's considered like different days, or maybe not. And therefore, therefore that was the question. And his answer is that my das inclines to say that according to both the Rav Nosson and the Tanakama, it would be fine. Then a fourth version of the story, Ravina Amahochi Chokule, Ravina says the question was as follows. Suppose you have a basin of three that sits to do a kiyum on a shtar. Somebody brings a shtar to basin, the loiva or whoever it is wants to claim that the shtar is forged, so they have to validate the signatures, they have to call in the edim, or they have to do one of the various methods that they can use to say that the signatures here are valid. So you have three dayonim sat down to do that. Umes echad mehen, and one of them after they checked out the edim, after they cross examined the edim, but before they had a chance to sign, umes echad mehen, one of those dayanim died. Srichi lemichtav, according to this fourth version, the question they asked Rabbi Yirmiyah is, do they have to write, when they write their kiyum, what we called earlier in the perek, and asharta, when they write a certification on the shtar, we have checked out these signatures and found them to be valid, and they sign their names, do they need to write, the most of tlosa havena, we were sitting as a basin of three, v'chad loisoyi, and one is no longer present, in other words, because otherwise, if we only have only two signatures on it, it's going to look as though they use a basin of only two, and they're not going to realize, they're going to think that it was a basin that doesn't know what they're doing, oilav, or do they not need to do that. Shalach Lahu, and according to this version, Rabbi Yirmiyah sends them back. Ani eini kedai shatam shlachtem li. I'm not worthy that you sent this question to me. Elakach das talmid chamnota, but the das of your talmid myself is that I would hold that should srichim lichtav that indeed they do need to write the michtav b'mosif tlos avena v'chad leisohi. You do need to write that nusach. We were sitting as three and one is gone, because otherwise if they just write, because the problem is the reason why they have to write the word v'chad leisohi is because what do you mean? You say there were three of us and then you only have two signatures, so it's going to look like the whole thing is false. So in other words, normally in a kiyum, you would normally write the most of, you always write the most of tlosa kachada havena. We were sitting as a basin of three, and this case was brought to us. But here, when you only have two signatures at the bottom, if you don't have the words, v'chad leisohi, and it's going to look like they're lying over here. What do you mean? With three of you sitting, we see only two signatures. So therefore, they have to write those words in order to make it clear. So he says that that's what they need to do. Anyway, the Gemara says, according to all versions, va'alda, for this, according to each of the four versions, whatever the question was, and whatever Rabbi Yirmiyah answered, ailuhu the Rabbi Yirmiyah, but medrusha, they readmitted Rabbi Yirmiyah into the base medrush. According to the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, it would mean he came back all the way back from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. According to everybody else, it would mean he was in Eretz Yisrael the whole time, but now he came back in, because again, now they saw that now he has the bittul that a person needs to have to learn Torah properly, that now he's accepted on himself that yes, what the Chachamim say is ironclad, and there's no playing around with it, and there's no second guessing it or whatever, and therefore by all means, knowing all this time that he's a great Talmud Chacham, and by all means they want to hear what he has to say, now they can actually have him in the Beis Medrash and know that there's not going to be any more of this kind of disruption.
What shows that he has Now,
the fact that in each case, according to each version, he answered, Ani eni kedai, I'm not worthy to give an answer, as though like it's the last word on the subject, but das Talmid Chanoita, the opinion of your Talmud, the fact that he's calling himself the Talmud of the other Chachamim in the Beis Medrash, shows that now he's willing to accept the basic principles that everybody else accepts in terms of how Torah works and how Kol Dibrei Chachamim work, and not to question and second guess them in the future. Or according to Rashi, the vote is he realized that now, until now, I was asking questions that are harassing and wasting their time, and now I'm not going to do that.
We don't.